Very fancy.
Isn't it super fancy?
Hello, I'm Jessica Panzer-Collins, and this is the Inside the Jewel Vault podcast. Each episode, I ask my guests to choose the six gems or jewels they would put into their fantasy jewel vault. I hope you enjoy listening. We recorded this episode remotely. I'm so excited to welcome Hannah Martin to the podcast. Hannah Martin is a leading designer whose fine jewellery collections emit a uniquely edgy, energetic aesthetic. Hannah founded her own workshop in Clerkenwell, East London in 2006, since when her work has straddled the gender divide as well as confronting norms of beauty and function. Hannah, welcome to the podcast. I can't wait to see what you've got for us inside your jewel vault.
Oh, thanks. Nice to be here.
So, Hannah, we're all more or less emerging from lockdown now. Tell me, what was your experience? What was this period like for you?
God, it's been a mix, really. I wish I could say, like, you know, lockdown happened and then I just got really creative and, made loads of amazing work. But actually, I was so freaked out. The first few weeks, I was like a rabbit in the headlights. But yeah, it has been initial trauma was over. It has been really nice, actually, in some ways, of having, there's been quite a lot of peace and quiet around, and I've been working pretty hard. We had a collection launch in the midst of everything. So that kind of kept me busy. And yeah, it's been lots of time to kind of assess the situation, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, assessing the situation. I like it, like a general campaigning.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of like trying not to go into like panic mode. Yeah, it was easy to be a bit daunted to start with, but I feel like there was kind of this pressure as well on everybody's like, oh, this is the time, you know, you could be, you know, write your novel, do this, do that, make the most of all this time. But like part of me was like, oh, can we just, with the fact there's a pandemic happening, we just do that and not worry about trying to be super creative and like a genius.
Yeah, so. Too overachieving about things.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, Hannah, well, can we travel back in time, do you think? Can we travel back to your childhood?
Yes.
For someone as super creative as you obviously are, were you a very creative child?
Yes, I think I was, actually. Or at least we did a lot of, like, I've got a little sister as well, and we did spend much of our childhood, like, making things. And my mum always likes to remind me of the fact that I used to like to, I'd sort of find something that I could do. I'd sort of set up, like a fan factory, and I'd make, like, 400 of them. And until I got completely bored of it, then I learned to do something else. I think I probably woke my poor little sister into doing it. So, yeah, we were always, like, making stuff, doing stuff. Yeah, it was quite a creative upbringing.
Yeah, sounds it. And were you creative at school? Was this something that was encouraged in your environment?
Yeah, I think my parents definitely so. I'd say school, kind of. I mean, I went to just like a local comp, and we, like, the art department wasn't huge, but obviously I kind of loved it, and I did have a really great, one of my art teachers was really fab and kind of like really encouraged me. But I think it was more parents rather than anything else. Most of my, because I also was quite academic as well, and a lot of my, when I decided I wanted to go to art school, I had the classic, like, my teachers going, oh, such a waste. One of them said, you're just going to end up being a painter and decorator. You know, you should be applying to Oxford. It's like, I don't want to. I want to go and make art. So, yeah, it was kind of a bit of a mix with school. But, yeah, my folks were definitely all for it.
And so with your parents' support, at least, you went all out to try and win that place on the foundation course at St. Martin's. Tell us, what was that like?
Oh, it was so exciting. I sort of decided, because when you do an art degree, you have to do this foundation year first, and then you go on to a degree. So I decided I was going to apply to do the foundation at St. Martin's rather than going to the, like, local art school. I think somebody has, like, said to me, well, it's better, you know, if you do your foundation there, it's easier to get into a degree. So I came up to London and did, I'd like made my portfolio, and my dad came up with me. We actually went and I applied to a few, like, Slade, and I can't remember where else, a few other art schools, but it's like St. Martin's was the thing. And I totally remember getting the letter through, and it was like, it was so overwhelming. I was like, it was amazing.
Yeah, and obviously the degree course at St. Martin's School of Art is incredibly prestigious. But as you've said, if you can get yourself onto that foundation year, that sets you up nicely for entry into the degree level, hopefully. But the wonderful thing about the foundation year is that you get to try such a massive range of art and craft disciplines. So you can really try everything, can't you? From knitting to calligraphy.
And that's where I discovered jewellery. So, I mean, I'm so lucky that I did do that, because otherwise, I always say, people always say, well, did you always want to be a jewellery designer from a young age? I'm like, no, I had literally no idea that it was even an option until I went to St. Martin. So you do this, like, literally like 3 days of like fashion, 3 days of architecture, 3 days of it, like all the way through the first two terms, you're just trying everything. Mm. And I did, like, literally, I mean, I'm probably looking back with loads of tinted spectacles, but I sort of remember almost the first moment I walked into the jewellery workshop, I was like, oh, this is brilliant. It was like loads of tools, loads of kit, loads of everything. I just totally fell in love. So
yeah.
I specialised in that. So the last term, you can pick specialism. So I did that, and that was, yeah, love at first sight, basically.
At the time, if you were living as a young woman in London, what sort of influences were going on around you? What was happening in your life?
I mean, honestly, I think that first foundation year was like seminal in my development as a human being, because you're kind of, when I look back on it now, there was a whole gang of us that met on that foundation year, and we're still like a massive family now, and we all like work together, spend a lot of time together still. I think it was such an intense experience, like coming, and it's sort of not like going to a normal university where you get put in halls and you're kind of like looked after. We were given a list of other people who didn't have a house in London, and you basically had to call them, like meet up, decide if you like each other, go and find a house. Like, you suddenly, it was like really thrown into the deep end of survival, basically. So it's that kind of quite intense. It was quite an intense year, and I think it meant that we all had this like absolutely like wild ride of it.
It's less of a foundation, really, more like a sort of maelstrom.
Completely. It's like a foundation in life in general. Like, there you go, kids, look after yourselves. This is what it's like. Yeah, completely. It was fab.
But you loved it, and you took to it.
Totally.
Immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely loved it.
And so this led then to you being awarded your place in the degree course.
Yes. Yeah. So I then obviously applied to do jewellery and do a degree there and got that, and I loved every minute of that as well, really. I just really enjoyed myself.
So where did you find your inspiration for the pieces for your degree show, which was such a successful debut for you? Well, what was moulding your work?
I had an amazing tutor in the second year who I'm still very good friends with, and I always say to him, it's like he kind of helped me find my way, really, because I remember being a bit lost, and I don't know, I didn't know what my style was, really. You know, it's that kind of like working out what you actually are. And I remember him saying to me, like, well, what do you actually like? Like, what do you do in your spare time? Like, what, you know, what turns you on? And I was like, you know, music was my thing, and this kind of like sex, drugs and rock and roll was always the thing that most excited me. And he was like, well, do that. And I was suddenly, it like made total sense. It was like, well, of course, like, of course I should do something that I like. And then I started looking, you know, got really sort of fascinated with the idea of gender and masculinity as well. And that all, it all kind of like came together sort of towards the end of my second year. And I really started making the work that I'm making.
So Hannah, tell us, what's the first piece in your fantasy jewel vault?
The first one that I put in, which was kind of referencing for my sort of more of my kind of early earlier than college kind of developments, because I was thinking about like influences of childhood, and the first piece I put in was like, it's just a really small earring, which is actually from like, I think it's the fourth collection I did, but it was basically the Lost Boys film was like the biggest, one of my favorite films, still is one of my favorite films of all time, and me and my sister used to watch it on repeat and like pretty much recite it. And I think that's also the reason I only have my ears pierced in one ear. I just wanted to be Kiefer Sutherland, basically, and a vampire. So that earring that I put in, which is the facet, this little facet hanging on a hoop, was my kind of like finally made myself like a dangling Kiefer Sutherland Lost Boys earring. And then the second piece that I put in was definitely, so that it's the spur ring, which I think is still one of the pieces that people like really know me for. And that was actually a piece that I developed at St. Martin's. The shape came from my degree show, and it was really what I launched myself and the brand with, that sort of first collection that came out of the work that I was making there. So yeah, that's very, it's very special to me, that piece, that spur ring. It's got a lot of history in it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The shape is amazing. It almost looks like an archer's ring, but not. It looks like a beak. It looks like many things.
Yeah, I made a pair of spurs, like kind of cowboy spurs, in that final year. I kind of forged them all. And there was this shape on the back, which then inspired that ring to kind of come through.
With that pointy...
Yeah. The kind of like, I don't know what I describe, but some people think it's
a spur.
Yeah, it is. I've named it. That's what it is. Yeah, and it kind of has a lot of the kind of design language that I suppose, like, now I look back, is quite me, because it's that they're quite sort of like sensual curves. There's quite a lot of curvaceousness to it, but it's got these sort of hard edges, so it's quite sculptural, which I think all those things, what I look for when I'm doing work with.
It's such a unique form, this ring. It would detract from the lines if you were to add lots of gemstones to it, wouldn't it? But do you add any pavé diamonds to it at all?
There's a little bit of, well, some of that I do, some of them plain, but there is, and in the original one there was sort of just a few little, the one I've got in front of me actually has got black diamonds sort of just sprinkled on that sort of lip at the top.
Just on one little edge,
yes.
Following the form of the spur. As it flows upward to its sort of point.
Yes.
It's not a sharp point, is it? But it's certainly not one you'd want to get too close to.
No, absolutely. It could definitely be like slightly useless or self-defense if you really needed to.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, is it adornment? Is it self-defense? Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Is it armor? Is it?
Is it expression?
Yeah.
Obviously, it is a form of expression. Incredible. So can we just go back to your first piece, which is very, very, very pretty, very innocent almost. So is it a sort of heart shape that is slightly faceted? Is there some softness to it at all?
A heart shape. It was, so, although some people think it does look like that. I didn't go with it as that, but it's just a little, it's like a little nugget of gold, basically. It came from that collection, it was called Vincent, and there was all my collections have this kind of story, like a character behind them that I work from, and he was this kind of Russian gangster ruling the streets of London in this sort of, this is super suave and sophisticated and like deadly dangerous. I had this whole kind of like scenario built up around him, and a lot of the shapes were quite angular, quite faceted, and that was just, it's just a little nugget basically, with the sort of facet lines on it that are sort of all a bit wonky and sort of a bit asymmetric is better than wonky. And it was just the idea of, I'm quite a selfish designer, to be honest, and I just make things that I want to wear.
Yeah.
I hope other people want to wear them too.
But that's the beauty of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So that, the little like ring dangling earring, it's a total Lost Boys reference. I actually, in my head, that one's called the Lost Boys earring. I don't officially call it that, but
I'm really intrigued about the idea of your characters behind each of your collections. Does Vincent exist?
No, only in my head. the only one, they all, I kind of make them all up. The only collection that I based on a sort of like inverted commas real character that I found was the man who knows everything series, which was Solaris and Delirium were both part of that series, and that was based on a story I'd read about this chap called the Count Saint-Germain, who is, it's quite an amazing story, and I'd sort of read something about years and years before, and it's sort of been in the back of my mind, and that collection I kind of dedicated to him. But and he was kind of, as legend has it, was an alchemist who discovered the elixir of life, and it's sort of been written about, like Pushkin had written about him, and Voltaire, and actually I think it was Voltaire that described him as a man that knows everything and never dies. So there's all sorts of rumors. I think there's actually a cult in America that still believes he's still alive. But he was the only one that kind of didn't come just out of a complete fantasy in my head. But all the other ones, they just sort of grow. They're kind of like Frankenstein's monster of everything that I'm sort of like into at the time, and they kind of build this like world. I always think it's like I kind of write a film in my head, and I make like I kind of imagine the world that they're in and the stories that happen in there, and then all the jewelry kind of fits in that. And actually, that to be honest is a way that I discovered at art school, and trying to get over the blank page syndrome of like having to come up with a year's worth of interest in work. And that was my kind of way into it, was this. I've always kind of loved creative writing, and I read an enormous amount of stories, and I love stories. I love losing myself in the fantasy world. So that was kind of like my own private way of like working out how I could get into a collection. And then it was only once I'd started the brand, and I think it was in the kind of first or second year, and I'd started working with a PR agent, and I must have mentioned a story, and they were like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Like, you should tell everybody these stories. So then it sort of became a bit of a thing. I still work like that. It's kind of essential for me.
And are you any of the characters?
That's a good question. No one's asked me that before. I don't think so. I mean, there's bits of me in them. They're actually all male. They've all been male, apart from this latest collection that I've done is a bit different, because it's an army. It's an army of characters rather than like this single character. Before then, it was always this kind of male character, but I don't know whether I'm in it. I sort of would say no, but then probably I am. Probably I'm in there somewhere.
So with your third year finished at St. Martin's, what happened next?
I think now I look back on it, it's like complete naivety of youth, because I don't know what I thought I was doing, really. I had no idea what I was doing, no idea how to run a business, like absolutely like nothing. But just jumped sort of headfirst into it, really. I got some really great press after the degree show, and I sold a few pieces, and I was like, I'm just going to do this, you know. I'll just do it. And I actually did it. There was this amazing program by a group called NESTA, which is the National Endowment for Science, Technology and the Arts. And they still exist, they run all sorts of incredible like support programs. It was harder getting into that than it was getting into St. Martin's. But the idea was to take creatives, like recently graduated creatives, and it was in all sorts of fields, not just in jewellery. In fact, it was quite a lot of people in sort of technology. Like there was a couple of sort of science-based projects, but it was people that had an idea. You had to pitch it almost like it was a business plan. And then once you got onto it, it was this amazing kind of 6 months of, we had sort of, they took us away for a few weeks. We had this super intensive kind of training, I suppose, where they brought in loads of people to talk to us, everything from like how to make a spreadsheet to running a business, writing a business plan. And it was building up to the fact that you could, at the end, pitch for investment. And some of us got it and some of us didn't. And I got some of that investment, which is how I made my first collection.
Oh, wow. And another industry experience you had early on was during your degree course. You won a place to go and train for a few months at Cartier's workshops in Paris, didn't you? I imagine that must have been an eye-opening experience. What was that like?
That was kind of like the groundwork for what I'm doing now, because that was my first experience of luxury, shall we say. Like that's mainly what I got. And Paris like opened my eyes completely to that world, which I'd had no, you know, I come from like a Yorkshire mining family. Like there's no such thing as like heirlooms. There's no such thing. Like I didn't have jewellery. That world was just not my world at all. Had no experience with it. So it blew my mind when I went to Cartier and like was handling the materials. I was actually working in the high jewellery department, so it was all the like super, you know, one-off pieces. It was an amazing experience. I learned all the super traditional techniques of like painting up and you know the attention to detail. I think that's what I took mostly from that experience.
Well, let me ask you, what's your third piece in the vault?
So it's the big bid shackle
for
bangle.
Yeah, bid for freedom.
And actually that came out, that was the second collection I did, which was this sort of pirates based collection. And I think I picked that one just because it's a piece that's really close to my heart, because I love it and I love wearing that piece. And it was a sort of, I feel like it was a bit of a kind of growing up piece in terms of my sort of design style. And actually that's the piece I don't know if you know Vivian Becker, who's the most amazing kind of jewelry journalist and historian, but
she's
amazing, and she's been very loyal and an amazing support to me. From, we met actually at my degree show, and we've become really good friends over the years, and she always cites that piece as, I think she did a piece on that bangle in the Telegraph, and it was like a first like really amazing bit of press, and she always cites that piece as one of her favourites. And I think it's kind of that, because there is something like a little, classics maybe the wrong word, but it's sort of like a nod to the kind of, you know, Cartier kind of manacles that they do, and this sort of more kind of grown-up jewellery. But I love the fact that it's kind of a bit naughty as well. I did a pair which was like a double version of those two, which I sold through Coco de Mer. So it's got this kind of like erotica to it, but it's kind of like hidden. So it's got all the like codes that I love in that piece. And it was one of the kind of first like big pieces of gold I did as well, like really big and heavy. So it's a bit special.
So this is a thick gold shackle for the wrist with a screw bolt fastening. It's very functional looking, looks quite heavy, and it's got very clean lines. Is it yellow gold?
Yellow, and it's got orange sapphires on the top of it. Although I've done a few versions, did an amazing version of that for a male client in LA who commissioned that in white gold and white diamonds. I've done different kind of like combos of it for people, but yeah, I love that. I really love those. I mean, I'm obsessive about gold and yellow gold, particularly yellow alloys, but yellow's like my favourite, and I love those, like the richness of the colour with the orange sapphires, and it's this sort of piratical in my mind.
Piratical but ultra luxury.
Absolutely, yeah.
And smooth, and obviously the mechanism of the screw,
yeah,
is, it must be quite an addictive sensation.
Yeah, and I sort of love that. Again, I guess it's sort of another theme that goes through my work, is that it's almost like quite industrial, I suppose, or engineered, and this sort of taking of something that's quite a normal object and putting it in a context of luxury, you know, just by making that in gold, it makes it something really exciting. But you've kind of got this like really industrial kind of, you know, screw mechanism, and it's in 18 karat gold. It's like, there's something I love about the juxtaposition of those things. So that's something I do quite a lot.
So following on with this piece, tell us about piece 4, which is, it's a diamond ring, but not like any diamond ring you've ever seen before.
Yeah, it's the Ring of Fire, it's called. And I put this one in just, I mean, it's people always say, what's your favourite piece, which is like impossible to answer, because it's like asking what your favourite child is. But this is definitely one of my highlights for me. And again, because I think it does a lot of the things that I try and do, like in all my work. It's, you know, I love diamonds. I always have loved diamonds. They're super special. You look at them and you think like, how the hell did the ground make that? Like, they're kind of like magical. But there's also, you know, they are also so overused in jewellery, you know, like they get a bit boring. And, you know, I kind of get a bit upset because people sort of think of diamonds, think of luxury, and actually they're, you know, there's so many, I'm such a fan of coloured stones, and they kind of get overlooked. And so I've always had this thing where I tried not to use diamonds for quite a number of years in my work, because I just thought it was too obvious. But then I decided that I was going to actually challenge that and challenge myself, and I did a collection of 6 diamond rings to kind of try and prove that you could have pieces of diamond jewellery that weren't just about the diamond. I think it was also because I had, you know, I do obviously use diamonds in bespoke work a lot, and you get people coming in and they've got this really fixed idea of like they want the kind of 3-carat D flawless, and it's like, it doesn't mean that you love someone more by buying them like it's a bit like buying a designer label. It always really frustrated me, and it was more about the stone than the actual kind of thing that held the stone. And I was like, well, you can, you know, it shouldn't just be about the diamond, you know, it should be about the design, and that the diamond has got significance within that design and you need it. So that ring was me going, okay, you can use diamonds, but it's not all about the stone, it's about how you use it and what the stones do, and if that's important in the design. And I feel like that one does exactly that. And it's kind of got that, you know, sort of open in the centre. So you sort of see your flesh through it, which is kind of quite sort of sexy, really. And then it's sort of surrounded by these, like, by the diamonds. Well, it's actually quite a large carat weight of diamonds, but they're obviously split up into all the little ones. So you get this kind of, I don't know, like kind of in-your-face diamond effect, but it's not kind of crazy over bling. It's a tiny bling, but in a cool way. So yeah, it was just me playing around really and wanting to sort of do something that gave diamonds a significance within the design itself.
Mm. It's beautiful. It's very sculptural. It's also it's a little bit like geology. It looks like a geological process.
Yes. Or sort of like dystopian city, or it's like a whole landscape in there. I kind of love that. Hopefully you'd never get bored of that ring.
So that's item four.
Yes.
And item five.
Yes.
Tell us about item. Describe it. It's a ring.
It's a ring. I'm wearing it actually at the moment because it never comes off my finger. It's huge. It's an eagle's head actually. And he's kind of, I carved it. So I sort of originally hand carved it out of wax. And again, it came from the same collection as the big shackle bangle, which was a kind of piratical themed collection. And it's a mixture of rose and yellow gold, which you might not be able to see from the picture, but the sort of top of the eagle's head is yellow and then the base is rose, and they're fused, so you get this really sort of subtle colour combination.
Isn't that quite technically difficult to do?
Yes. Yes, and especially making the, like, because I hand carved both the bits and getting them to fit was really fun. Never want to shy away from a challenge technically.
It's a beautiful effect.
I really love it. I do a lot of that mixing of colours now. I really like it. But there was quite a good story. This one came from, it was actually the kind of starting point, I think, for that whole collection, because it was a conversation I was having with a friend who was telling me the story about an old archaeologist that she'd met, and she was describing him to me, and she was like, you know, he looked like he kind of had all these like tales to tell in his face, and he was wearing this massive gold lion's head ring, and she was fascinated by this ring, and she was like, it looked like he dug it up out of the ground, and it made such an impression on me, that kind of visual picture, that whole sort of pirate story kind of grew out of that little conversation, and so all I wanted to do was make this giant gold ring that a pirate might wear, and that this is what came out of it. But he just has become my sort of lucky talisman. Like, this ring's been lost and found, and like has so many stories. It's been, I think I did it in 2007. I had the one that I wear is that old, and he looks now a bit probably like that archaeologist's ring. Like, it's got some stories to tell. But I feel naked without it. It's like, well, if I can't go out of the house without it, I feel like something's gonna happen.
So this is a talisman for you.
Absolutely a talisman for me. And I put that in as well, because I mean, that's the thing I love about jewelry probably the most of all, is that, you know, I tell these stories when I'm making it, and I tell the stories to myself, and there's sort of, you know, then somebody else has that piece, and then it sort of starts to have its own stories with that person, and then maybe it's passed down a generation, and it has more stories, and it just builds. There's something, I don't know anything else that does that, and maybe it's because you wear it next to your skin so much, but there's something like magical about how jewelry kind of can hold this history and build this history, and you can almost kind of feel it.
So in your everyday life, do you wear jewellery a lot? Is this is it something you surround yourself with? Are you constantly trying things on, pieces that have come out of the workshop, pieces that you're thinking of producing? You know, how much does jewellery figure in your own daily life?
I mean, quite a lot. I've got my kind of set of jewellery that I wear that's kind of mine, which is like lots of big rings. But so the eagle ring that we talked about, I've got two eagles actually. I've got another massive, they're sort of, yeah, my hands are kind of covered in big rings, and then I've got a load of ear piercings as well, so I wear a lot of earrings, and that's kind of like my uniform of like everyday jewelry. And then I do test wear everything, so you kind of have to, especially like, it just needs to, you need to be sure it's wearable. As things are kind of coming out of the workshop, or as I'm testing things, I'm kind of like wearing them for a bit, seeing how it goes. And then that's how I keep adding to my collection, because then sometimes I kind of can't live without it. I'm like, I've got to make one for me. It's really, I have my sort of like everyday wear. And then, jewelry does feature. I sort of always think, that's one of the things I love about jewellery as well, and what kind of got me between like going down a fine art path and a sort of design path is like it does have to have a function. As creative as it is, it has got to be worn on the body, and it needs to work in that way, and it needs to answer the brief in that way. So wearing it's really essential to make sure it does actually work.
Yeah, and it feels part of your skin. It feels like an extension of your body. So what about item six? This is a piece I can't even begin to describe it. It is a bangle, but it's not a bangle. It's the most beautiful piece of sculpture.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice. Yeah, this one that I thought I'd end with a bang. So it's from the new collection that I've just launched, which is and like I have to say, this is my like this was the kind of crowning glory for me and sort of summed up what I was trying to do with that whole collection. It's this huge. It is huge, and I'm touching it now, and it's kind of got such an amazing weight to it. But it's essentially a bolt that is just like lashed onto your wrist with a bit of old rope. But the bit of old rope is like yellow gold, and the bolt is made of carved malachite, and it has like rose gold end. So it's totally going back to what I was saying before of like taking something that's really kind of mundane and transforming it into something that's the opposite of that, hopefully. You know, it's funny, when I was working, like this collection I've been working on like sort of 2 years or so, and it's probably one of the most personal collections I've done. I sort of went through quite a few changes in my life, and this was a kind of like everything sort of went into this collection of what's happened in the last couple of years. And I wanted to do something that felt absolutely kind of like new and modern and that you haven't seen on the market before. And so one of the things that went into that was using like no sort of inverted commas precious stones at all. So there's like no carve stones, there's no diamonds, there's nothing in it. It's all about the kind of these massive sculptural gold pieces, and then I used carved ebony and carved malachite. And I wanted these things to feel like they were like yelling at you. Like it was kind of like a massive shout, a massive like rage. And I think this bangle does it like the most. And, you know, it feels amazing to wear. It feels amazing to pick up. And the other thing I feel quite strongly about with jewelry is that it should look as good off the body as it does on the body. Because if you're spending a lot of money on something, it's kind of nice to have it like, you know, sitting on your side when you're not wearing it. And this bangle kind of does that as well. It's like, every angle has a sort of different view to it, and it's my, I mean, they're kind of my new babies at the minute, this collection, so I'm a bit obsessed with it still, but it's definitely not for the faint-hearted, this piece.
No, it's stunning. So it's interesting what you said about this collection. This is from the new Act of Rebellion collection, which is your latest one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's quite autobiographical.
And it's sort of autobiographical on like loads of different levels. And it was only, it's funny because, you know, I kind of work, when I'm working, I kind of get in this, like when I'm sort of really in that sort of midst of the creative part, I'm in this kind of bubble, and I'm really horrible to be around because I don't want anyone to talk to me. I just want to be like in this world that I've made and like for no one to burst my bubble. So I don't think hugely rationally at the time, or I'm not sort of analysing what I'm thinking, but it's funny looking back once I'd sort of started coming out of it and like looking at what I'd done, I was like, it was more autobiographical than I was kind of planning, I think. But yeah, it was really a reaction to like the last couple of years. So I'd split up with my husband and a long-term business partner all within the kind of year. I'd had this sort of like, my life had turned upside down. It was sort of I've been sort of like battling to get free, I suppose would be the word, for a while, and then all of this sort of happened, and also with everything that was happening in the world at the time, it was kind of like, you know, from Brexit through to Trump through to all the sort of political stuff that was, felt like it was in turmoil, and it all kind of like fed into this like melting pot of like me wanting to stand on the top of a like mountain and like scream.
Gosh, now that you've explained that, I can understand what it actually sends goosebumps up my spine looking at the way you describe the piece as a bolt, this beautiful piece of secure engineering, but it's been lashed by these coils of rope to one place. So yeah, it's like hanging on and finding the will to push on through and to make what you can of things. I love the idea that also you're very anti-complacency.
Yes, totally. It's like my ongoing battle. I've never done, that's a good way to describe it actually, but yeah, I'm strongly anti-complacency. It's my worst nightmare, getting comfortable, like settling for something.
So to lead on then a little bit away from these six very strong, very autobiographical and very very fascinating pieces, I love the way that you've assembled them all. They are all yours. If you had to put in another a piece from the whole of history, the whole of mankind's love of jewellery and ornament and display, what sort of piece do you think you might have chosen?
Do you know what? I was thinking about this and I haven't got an exact answer, but it's a toss-up between two things. So either a Suzanne Belpron piece, and I wouldn't be able to pick a specific one, but she is like my idol. My jewellery, if I had to pick one jeweller, she would be it. And I've always kind of totally loved her pieces. So something, I don't know, one of hers, one of the rings maybe, that she was kind of like the carved stone, like Charles Sedley, with like something sitting in it. To be honest, any piece of hers I would pick. Or it would be an Andrew Greimer, would be my other one. And I can't decide which one I'd have. But it would be one of those two designers for sure, because they're both, I'm pretty fussy about jewellery because obviously I like what I do. But those two are both like absolutely inspirational for me.
You could have them as guests in your vault.
Yes, absolutely.
But no, we won't. We won't have their pieces.
I'd love to hang out with them both for a while. It'd be great.
A fantasy jewellery party.
Yeah, absolutely.
With them as guests.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so the rule of the vault is that out of six, you, through some act of cataclysm, they are about all to be lost. But you do get to keep just one piece. So which piece would it be?
Oh my God, that's really hard. I think it would have to be the bolt bangle. I think it would, just because that would get me through any coming cataclysm. I think I'd need that one. If something was happening, I think I'd need the bolt bangle to see me through it. I think I'd pick that one to keep, and just, it's sort of closest to my heart at the moment because it's so fresh and so intimate. So I think that would be the one.
Well, Hannah, you get to keep that one. I can't thank you enough for sharing your fantasy vault with us. It's not really a fantasy vault, is it? Because these are real pieces. I love the fact that these are pieces that you've created, a part of you, and that tell your own story.
Oh, it's really a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we did recording it. You can find images of all the wonderful jewels we've been talking about, along with lots more information, at our website. Just go to vipjewelvault.com/podcast. And I want to hear from you. Tell me, what special pieces would you put into your fantasy jewel vault and why? Every so often I'll be collating your stories into a podcast of their own. So please get in touch and of course rate, review and subscribe so we can keep these conversations as meaningful and joyous as we can. Thank you.